It's Bill Moyers, Mr. Ambassador. Mr. Ambassador, this is Bill Moyers. The President will be with you in just a minute. He's with the Prime Minister of Korea, and he'll be out in just 1 minute.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, Governor?
President, I've been having a talk with you about this vote on the game of the
little louder, Governor. I'm having trouble here.
I say I think the permission to vote for this resolution, because if we abstain on it, I'm afraid it will undermine the moral position that we have obtained here over a period of years. It looks very much as though we have one rule of law for some countries, as in the case of the Israel Arab dispute. We have another.
I haven't been aware of this, Governor, until just a moment ago. I've been meeting, I'm with the Prime Minister of Korea now, and the first information I had about it was since your call came in.
I'm glad to have you have the Prime Minister of Korea, because I got your wife.
Oh, well, you keep her. you make her very happy, too. I wonder if we couldn't find a way of making it known that we're abstaining just to prevent a veto and trying to support the wise butler against the rather impetuosity of Mr. Sanders and...
Well, we can't very well say that in the Security Council.
No, but we have an underlying feeling that these resolutions totally miss the real issue involved. And, Rust feels very strongly that we're going to be up against the same thing in an instance or two, and that if we run out on the British now, we're going to be in a hell of a shape but what we're asking them to do in two or three places for us.
Well, I understand that, and this is the real problem we confront, whether it's better to our company with them on this matter, which is entirely consistent with the thinking of their delegation is against what they're doing here. Did you know Rand Butler was against what they're doing here?
Yeah.
We've now got the resolution so moderated that it's consistent with the position that we ourselves have advocated most earnestly before and have suffered for and have come out on top with in the past. I don't want to for a moment deprecate the importance of the other things that are going with the British, but I can't but believe that if we do the right thing here in the long time, in the long run with our best friend, that it's the best politics for them. And that likewise we will weaken our position and our influence in the UN where the British are going to need us again sometime. Not only are we going to need them, but they're going to need us. And if we have had a kind of a one for our closest friend and one for the other, I can't but believe it's going to diminish our usefulness to them when the time comes. When they may jolly well need us again, and they surely will, because they're under incessant pressure everywhere, South Africa, Southwest Africa, Rhodesia, and so on. Moreover, this is a case where they should have come into the Security Council and complained about the game and the attacks on them. Instead of that, they first committed a brutal reprisal, and then the Yemen comes in, and then they ask us to sit in. Now, I think if we voted for the resolution, we could very well make an explanation of vote in which we pointed out that we voted for this resolution because it singled out the, it doesn't condemn the British mind, it takes that word out, it says deplore the British military action and heavy. Then it also says it deplores all attacks in this region which have occurred in the area, which is by omission, equally deploring what the Yemeni has done. Had the British come in and complained about what the Yemeni did before they would tell you, they would have been on the other foot. They disregarded this, they disregarded their delegation here. Their ambassador here has filed a most bitter protest to the Foreign Office about this thing. And I think there's a sharp division within the British government about it, and you got to know. Well, I can remember so well when we were under the same pressure in 56, at the time of the U.S. put up to it. Secondly, in December 1962, when they turned the heat on Kennedy, and we capitulated and were on the case of the Congo and the fighting in the Congo, and all it did was prolong the fighting for another year when it was resumed and when we didn't wobble, and we finished it up over the most bitter British protest. Now the British are, of course, saying that that was a wonderful operation, and they're, and indeed they have been very cooperative and friendly about it. I think there are occasions when we simply have to exercise our own judgment about what our policy should be, especially in this forum when you've got everybody else involved, where we have to maintain our integrity of our leadership. I will try like hell to get this thing slightly amended this afternoon so that we could diminish somewhat the identification of the British as the principal lawbreaker. I don't know whether I can or not. The resolution originally put in was much worse. It provided not only didn't say the floor, it provided it said condemnation. It also called for compensation for all the victims and so on. We got all of that stuff out of here. And it isn't, I don't think that they should be complaining about it at all. As a matter of fact, the British are going to abstain, and I didn't want to veto it. And they're going to say that the reprisal doesn't apply to us because it's not a reprisal. They have run quite a few things. Now, Dean raises the question about whether or not this constitutes precedent. Would embarrass us in some cases where we might have to take reprisal. I think this is raises the question of degree as to what constitutes a reprisal that's permissible and what isn't permissible. I don't have any doubt that in the cases that I know about, which we might have to do something before we can come into the forum of the UN, that we can justify them on the grounds that they're essential self-defense. Whereas here, of course, this little border way out on the border of the Arabian Sea. really think it's a fairly serious question just because it leads us to such an inconsistent position. And I would like you to take a look at it if you possibly can find the time and see if you can find it in your heart to let us vote for this damn thing. If you can, of course, I'll go ahead and do precisely what you say, but I think I can assure you and the decision up here is unanimous that the consequences of it there, while they may not be immediate, it will have a very corrosive effect on the kind of influence and moral position that we have here. Moreover, you yourself were up here and made a speech about how we're going to sustain and support the charter and this debate is the center of U.S. foreign policy. And here, in effect, we condone the use of force. I don't say that. No, I shouldn't say condone the use of force. We support it as a resolution attached to the force by anybody. But we do single out, in this case, disassociate ourselves from the best use of force, which is the subject of the complaint. That was the retaliation against Turkey, which they killed 28 people. The only evidence on the record here of what the enemy did, although they doubted there were a lot of border harassment, was killing two camels. So this sort of is hardly equal. That's a positive. And I think it's the sort of thing that arouses a lot of people countries. Our stature in the world, and trying like hell to deserve that, and it's I don't think we should be in this position. I don't think you should be in it. Also, it's the outcome of your administration, frankly. I just think it's not the sort of moral position that you want to get caught with, merely to accommodate a cabinet position in the United Kingdom. Even if you know there's been a lot of feeling in the United Kingdom that they.
Of course, I'm not so much worried about the cabinet position in the United Kingdom as I also got a cabinet position in the United States. And I never saw him feel quite so strongly that while there's no question but what some of these actions were excessive and imprudent, we weren't properly consulted, that nevertheless, our relationship with them is such and is going to be in the immediate days ahead that would be very unwise not to abstain. Now, I haven't had a chance to review it in detail with him, but he called me and says that he's given these instructions and he feels very strongly that I ought to leave him. Now, I
the importance of accommodating the British is this one against our whole position in the world, not only in the UN, but in the world in the press. When we wobble on this and abstain and take a position that, well, you know, we don't know the difference between right and wrong.
I wonder if we couldn't just abstain and take the position that we think that we're doing that in order to help prevent a veto. No, but I mean, couldn't that be part of the deal that we'd abstain to keep them from vetoing and let the resolution go on through?
We might be able to put that out as sort of a background story for the press. I don't think they meant it. In the first place, there's no truth in it. Maybe the British would accommodate us by confirming it. But we can't say that in the Security Council very well.
What they think here is that this is a very embarrassing thing, and there's a good deal of merit to what you're saying. But if we abstain, then we could go in and say to Hume that we want you to know that this is just a one-time act of loyalty, and we're not going to repeat it in any parallel circumstances, because in our view, the reaction on which we were not consulted, it was excessive, and it was imprudent, and it was unwise. We should find a way of working out with them that we abstained in order to prevent an outright veto, and in order to support Butler against Sands because of the underlying feeling that these resolutions totally miss the real issues involved, and that we're not going to do it anymore, but in this instance,